This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And a good morning, one and all. A little cloudy right there right now.
A little cloudy, but warm.
And stopped raining, which is good I was telling Charlie before we got in the studio here, today's a big day at the farm.
We've got all
the family coming for Thanksgiving dinner.
And spending the night.
We've got a blow-up mattress to get from
every
the
floor
garage.
Space oh, my covered Lord. In bodies.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be just a ton of
wild
fun,
and
woolly. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
So that's an early Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
But it's also maybe a bit of a Rosh Hashanah you're having, right?
Because
that starts tomorrow night. So
yeah,
you'll
good
be
morning to all our,
happy
our
New
friends
Year
of the Jewish faith. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
I was going to say, I feel pretty darn good for a guy who's just lost $50 million. I won nothing in the lotto max. But
you
then
told
again,
me nobody won nothing.
Nobody won. Well, not the big prize. So
it's yours next week.
$60 million.
Just buy
I'm waiting for
tickets.
That. Anyway, here we are, my friends, and Charlie Dobbin is here as well. She is your garden expert, okay? I'm the under gardener. Mm-hmm. I'm the guy who gives you the phone numbers like this.
That's your job.
For Toronto, in Toronto. Call 416-360-0740. Then anywhere in the province, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And our little mantra goes this way. Call early, call often, one question per call. And if you happen to be a first-time caller, please let Duncan, our operator, know, and he will let me know. And just before you get to the airways, you're going to get the garden wings, your bell.
And there's nothing better than the garden wings.
Oh, good heavens, because
then you're up and you can hover and get a much better, different perspective.
Maybe a little Jameson's, but other than that. What do you got for us? You've got some emails?
I do have a few emails, but they're kind of long, so we'll get to those eventually.
Okay.
It's the old one question on the radio show. It's 14 questions by email.
There you go.
Novels. Just want to remind everybody, my website has excellent tips, information about what's going on in my garden, and some of the wonderful callers' tips and recipes.
Yeah.
They're up on charliedobbin.ca or charliedobbin.com, or believe it or not, charliedobbin.net and .org. Oh, yeah, Sydney covered
them all. Your daughter covered everything, didn't she?
She's great. She's totally great. So there's that going on. Cats. I'll just give you, cats and gardening don't go together, but they do. So Mist, I think I told you, like he's our feral cat that adopted us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so interesting because when we moved with him and have taken him with us to Prince Edward County, he knows obviously. And it's almost like he's like, you really love me. Like you took me. Like you are looking after me forever and ever and ever kind of thing. And it's like he's like smiling all the time. He's like you look at him, he starts purring, like he's just happy.
Because I know it took forever and a day for you to even reach out to touch him.
Oh yeah,
or
we're five years.
Indoors.
Oh gosh, he would just it was super cold. He would sneak in for like 30 seconds and eat really fast and run outside. So it's been a long process of taming that kitty cat.
Isn't that great?
But it's just so cute how he's like walking so tall, right? Like it's like, oh, you really do love me. But meanwhile, Carter, our other kitty cat, who is so long suffering and such a sweetheart, putting up with the mist. Carter's missing the outside a lot. Of course, we don't want to let him out because it's just too much unknown, and we don't have any trees to speak of. There's no shelter in case something tries to get him. But he was trained on a leash and a harness as a kitten, so he's back into the leash and the harness.
Oh, you take him for a little walk.
So we've been going for little walks, which is so funny, walking along in our sort of wasteland of a yard, and all of a sudden, so he's walking, la, 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 because he wants the grass, like he's chewing crab grass, right?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, a cricket jumped right in front of him, and my cat is big and overweight. And he, I swear, he went straight up 4 feet. I have not seen him do that in years. It was so funny. And he's like, whoa, yeah. I'm going to die. It's a cricket.
Oh, my.
I'm gay. I want to go inside now.
Oh, that's great. What a neat report.
Yeah. So that's what's going on at my house at this
it's
point.
It's a perfect report. Oh, dear. All right. Well, with that behind us, that vain, awful attempt at humor, let's take a little break here and then come back and say hi to Peter in Southampton. By the way, in Southampton, last weekend was a huge weekend. They had the big band celebration.
Oh.
There, Southampton and Port Elgin.
Oh,
so
wow.
maybe Peter can
give us
let
an
us
update.
Know if he had fun with that. Okay. All that coming by here on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And hello there to people tuned in, you know, with the camera.
Oh, on the web.
Studio.
Yeah, we stream people, live.
I forget that, you know.
That we're here.
Yeah, so we've got to be very careful with some of our facial expressions. Yeah. Hey, Peter in Southampton, good morning. Hi, Peter.
I didn't attend the big band concert or whatever it was.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
So no report, obviously.
Okay. I have two hibiscus plants, mm-hmm. perennial.
Mm-hmm.
And one is a deep red, and the other is a pinkish white. And they both have great blooms, eight inches in diameter.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the problem I have is that the red hibiscus gets attacked with an insect. And right now, it looks like someone took a shotgun.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And the foliage is full of holes.
Yeah,
looks like a lace, I'm sure.
Have you seen any insects on the plants?
No. What I do is I take my ammonia concentrate in the early spring and spray it.
All right.
And later on, when the foliage is on, I use a safer insect spray.
Right. Now, that works if you see insects. Remember, safer soap will not kill insects that are not being sprayed. So, and it's not a preventative in any way, but it is very effective if sprayed onto pest insects.
Yeah. Do you look at, like, in the bottom of the leaves, the back side of the leaves?
I have looked on the back. I have looked on the bottom of the leaves, and I see nothing. So maybe they come out at night. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there are. I mean, slugs, snails, earwigs, they're all the nighttime chewers, the nocturnal insects. But you know what's been a huge challenge this year for a lot of people are the Japanese beetles.
Oh, really?
And they'll eat anything. They'll eat leaves. They'll eat buds. They'll eat flowers. I mean, and they just, once they get going, they just chow down.
Huh?
Yeah, voracious.
Oh, wow.
I mean, the good thing, Peter, is that we are getting towards the end of the season. The perennial hibiscus, of course, will, once it's frosted, the foliage will all die down and, you know, basically go to sleep for the winter and then emerge next spring. What I would do is, look really closely for, and the ammonia idea on the soil early in the spring is a good idea in terms of slug and snail nests that might be there. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's maybe get your flashlight and go out in the middle of the night. But if it is Japanese beetles, you should see them during the day.
But my question is, why doesn't it attack the hibiscus with the white?
The pink.
Nothing has touched that.
Interesting. So the red one's more edible than the pink one, the pink and white one. That's the point. Mm. I mean, they aren't the same, right? They look different and they probably taste different. And so something's going on there that it's not as tasty. The pink and white one is, for whatever reason, not as tasty as the red one, which is unusual because the red one is the so-called wild type. You would think the wild type would be actually the tougher one of the two. And the pink and white one, a little more highly bred, typically not as vigorous, and more often is the one that would get annihilated, and yet this is the opposite.
Wow. Doesn't sound like Charlie has the answer for
you. I don't have a clear answer, that's for sure. It's a get that flashlight in the middle of the night, see if you can see anything. Insects can be obviously squished or drowned or whatever. But we are at the end of September, so we are moving on in terms of the seasons.
What about the rubber
anyway?
Hose thing, you know, laying a section of rubber hose for the earwigs that might...
If it's earwigs.
Yeah. Do you put anything in the...
No, it's because earwigs don't like light. As soon as the sun comes up, they dive for cover. Well, so you put a like empty piece of hose or bamboo, the hollow bamboo, and that you create a little hotel for them for
and
during
the
day. And
then dump them into a pail of water.
That's right. You have to empty them. Otherwise, you really are creating a hotel.
Well, good luck with that, Peter. Sure, we couldn't be more
definitive
on that.
Yeah, if there's any more information on that. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Hey, just a minute. Frankie reaches for the bell. Just a minute.
Yay.
That's for Bob in Scarborough. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Great, thank you.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. My question is probably very simple. I have two large sunflower plants in the backyard, and they have beautiful sunflowers on them.
Mm-hmm.
What my question is, how do I harvest the seeds from those plants before the squirrels get them?
I was going to say, I'd be surprised if you can. And so the squirrels haven't been up on the sunflowers yet?
Not yet.
Wow.
Don't say that too loud.
I got slow squirrels in my area.
I
live in the city. Now I live in Scarborough.
No, but the squirrels, there's lots of squirrels in Scarborough.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it comes down to a question of maturity of the seeds, right? So, there's that fine line. Ultimately, what you're going to do if you're going to harvest them is you're going to get out some loppers and you're going to lop that whole sunflower head off of the top of the stem and then bring it into a situation like maybe a porch or a spot where it can dry down a bit. And so you don't want it in the house. You don't want it in the garage, but you want it out of the weather, out of rain and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's that drying down. And then it's literally once it's sat out for, 7-8 days, you'll find that just rubbing it with your hands, the seeds will just drop out. So, but you harvest too early, then the seeds aren't mature. You harvest too late, then the squirrels will have their way.
Yeah.
I understand. Okay.
Gee, good luck with it. Let us know how you make out with that, Bob.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, good for you.
Like
being able to grow two, woof.
I know.
Usually when they're about 2 feet tall, the squirrels are on them. Right?
Well, you know where we live, right across the road from us, and just down the road about 100 yards. There are a Chinese family there who are growing fields.
Oh, nice.
Sunflowers, like
beautiful.
Thousands of sunflowers.
Wow.
Oh, my God. And they're huge.
So I wonder what they're growing them for.
I don't know. I suspect maybe for the seeds.
Of course. But, is it the oil? Like, sunflower seeds are grown for oil. There's the oil industry. There's the cut flower industry.
Yeah.
There's the bird seed industry.
I got to go ask them.
Yeah. There's so many sort of different reasons why you would grow sunflowers.
Yeah, be nosy. Hello, it's your nosy neighbor here.
I know. What's going on? What's the long-term plan?
What's with the sunflower? Okay. We have to take a break, and we're coming back to say hi to Ethel in East York. You are listening to The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And as promised, we're heading to East York. There's Ethel on the line. Good morning, Ethel.
Good morning. Good morning to both of you.
Morning.
I have a question about this hydrangea. I have the new one, it's called a Bethany, I think.
Okay.
The pink one, which is turns pink right now. It's beautiful pink right now. Do I trim it right back in the springtime?
I do.
You do?
Yeah, I leave the blooms on for the winter because they'll turn bronze.
I always do, yeah.
Yeah, and they're ornamental. I mean, some of them will blow in the wind and end up at the neighbors. But either way,
it's
a certain amount of protection for the plant by leaving that growth there. And then I wait till the spring and when the hydrangea starts to wake up, right, when the soil starts to warm up enough and the temperatures are warm enough, you'll start to see little green buds on the stems.
Uh-huh.
And the green buds will definitely typically always be at the bottom or base of the bush or the shrub.
Mm-hmm.
They sometimes will go all the way up to the top, depending on what kind of winter we have, whether it's a really cold one or not. But regardless of whether there's green up at the top or not, I still always take the plants down to about 6 inches tall.
6 inches, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I made a mistake. I got them in there for 2 years now, and I did not trim it last year. And I'm telling you, it's tall this year.
Yeah, and then they flop.
And it fell apart.
That's right.
So I had to tie them back up, just to keep them in shape.
Yeah, and you don't want that. If you have to tie up your plants, then it's just not worth it. You'd be better to prune at the right time. So early spring when you start to see the green.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much. Have a great day, both of you.
Thank you, Ethel. Bye-bye. Appreciate that. And hey, it looks like the sun's going to pop out. Do you know that?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Gray sky, but bright. Yeah. Palgrave, Ontario. There's Mary on the line. Good morning, Mary. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you. And good morning to both of you.
Morning.
I called probably a couple months ago about a plant that I bought and had indoors.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Lily of the Nile.
Yep.
And you said it should be outside.
For the summer.
In the summer, and that's what I did do.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do with it now? Because I split it up because it was so huge.
Wow.
And it's all roots. And now that I have it, what do I do with it for the winter?
So what did it look like all summer? Did it bloom?
No.
Okay, so you had a bunch.
It wasn't out, I don't think, long enough. I think it was only out for a couple of months.
Okay, but it was so a lot of green leaves, though, right?
Yeah.
And it was in a pot or in the ground?
No, I divided it up into about four pieces and then put it into pots and put the pots into the ground. And now I've taken that out.
Okay. So during the summer, during the growing season, so May to September, it's Lily of the Nile is also known as agapanthus. So it's a lovely flowering bulb, blue flowers, not that hard to grow if you've got lots of sun, well-drained potting mix in your containers, some fertilizer during the growing season. But those pots with those tubers in there will need to come in and be frost-free for the winter or they will die.
Okay.
So
I can bring them indoors?
Yeah, now if you have
Should I leave them in soil?
I would.
Or take them out of the soil?
No, I would leave them in the pots. There's no reason to unpot them.
Okay.
Now, if you have a sunny window, you can continue to grow them as houseplants. If you have a root cellar, you can force them to go dormant, stop watering them. Leaves will all turn yellow and just stick them into a cool, dark location, and they will just sleep for the winter, and then you'll wake them up in March, roughly, by pulling them out.
I don't have that cool, dark location. I do have a sunny window that's totally full of plants, but I'll see what I can do.
Fit them in. Maybe give one away.
And then the spot. So that's what you do. You bring them in the pots and leave them.
That's what I do. Mm-hmm. It's
and then
way easier.
Come spring again, put them back out again.
That's right. Once we're
And should I leave them in the pots then or take them out of the pots?
No, I leave them in the pots. And of course, if they're huge, big tubers, you may need to move up to a bigger pot. It's hard for me to say.
Well, they look like roots. They don't look like tubers. I don't know. They're just a whole lot of roots.
Yeah, but you want them root bound. You want the pot to be full of roots because they'll always bloom better when they're root bound.
Okay. They're not root bound right now because I divided them up and gave them extra space.
Yeah. So that's good. So you're good for a couple of years now. Main thing is in and out with the weather.
Okay, we'll do that. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you, Mary. Yeah, interesting.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you very much. And you have a great weekend, too.
Yeah.
Hamilton, there's Barbara. Hey, Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, Frank and Charlie.
Good morning.
I was told to call you in August, but a lot was going on in August, and here I am a whole month late. But it's concerning my poinsettia.
Okay.
It looks beautiful, the green leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all it has. There's no red or yellow.
Yeah, well,
is
it's not Christmas. Well, but it's not Christmas yet. What's your rush?
Right. So I bought it inside.
Yes.
From outside.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what should I... Should I have it in the... Somebody told me I have to put it in the dark.
Yes, you do.
So I put it in the closet in my bedroom. But would it be better down in the fruit cellar?
Okay, so here's the deal. If you want your green poinsettia to turn colors, whether it's red or pink, whatever color it was last winter,
right.
It will do that again. But you need to give that plant 12 hours of light and 12 hours of dark every 24 hours for the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Oh, wow.
So it's in and out. So it's into the closet and then out of the closet every 12 hours.
Okay, so at night in the go to bed in the morning wake up.
Yeah, and if you've put it into your closet, say in your bedroom, just make sure that at night when you're going to bed, like say you put it away at 7 o'clock at night and you know you're going to pull it out the next morning, but you're in your bedroom and you say, I need to get my house coat out of the closet. You don't want to open that door. So it's got to be kept in absolute black darkness with not even a speck speck of light when it's
actually
in the dark.
Actually, it has its own bedroom.
Oh, there you go. So, that's beautiful.
Okay.
No, it's quite. It's not that hard
problem
to do.
Solved,
it's just that repetitive
time
in and out.
And I think I've made a mistake already because I've had it in the closet day and night.
Yeah, that, I know people know about the dark, and then but logically, I mean, seriously, logically, it's going to die if it's in the dark all the time.
It's called photoperiodism
when a plant responds to light and dark. Well, dark,
I know
dark more than
a
anything.
Lot of people are telling me, I won't bother with it. Don't do it. It's a lot of work.
But it's fun.
Timing with the lights. And
I know.
Thought, well, I'll listen to Charlie. She's the pro.
Sometimes I tease people. I go, just buy a new one. But
exactly.
Still, it's fun to try.
No, yeah.
Yeah, it is. I'm just experimenting.
Sure, why
good
not?
For you.
If it works, it works. If it doesn't, well.
There you go.
Another loss.
Exactly.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks
okay,
for calling.
Thank you. Hopefully have a good day.
Timely
you
question. You know,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
coming, right?
So, yes.
Good, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And the stores, Costco and God knows. Oh, I forget what another
mums.
Store is.
It's all mums right now.
Well, I saw some Christmas decorations
oh,
coming out.
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know,
they're all
Lord Love a Duck.
They've got Halloween on one side and Christmas
yeah,
on the
I
next.
Know,
and they've
I know.
Had that Christmas out for like 6 weeks.
I know.
Like, what the?
Hey, Wanda in Scarborough, what's going on? Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning, Charlie and Frank.
Good morning.
I was given an African violet. Well, there were three in a pot, and mm-hmm. they bloomed beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I separated them into smaller pots.
Okay, good idea, yeah.
But how do I get them to bloom now?
All right. So now you put, tell me you put them into little like 4-inch pots, right?
Right.
Okay, good. And where have you got them located in terms of a window?
Well, they're it's a north bay window.
Okay, that's good. They'd like a north window.
Do they?
Yeah. As long as it's not too cold. So come winter, be aware of the any cold coming off the window.
Right.
The main thing, okay, there's two things with African violets. Yeah, I guess there's probably even more than two, but I find they do best when you make when you stress them a bit. So err on the side of underwatering rather than overwatering. So so feel the soil, watch the leaves. When the leaves start to droop a little bit, water. But remember, water from below, like there's a saucer below. So
yes.
put your water into the saucer or on the surface of the soil, but you never want to get the leaves wet.
No, I do it from the bottom.
Yeah, and some people are big fans of some of the African violet fertilizers because there are many of those out there. But I just find that African violets are just funny that way. They, it's got to do, like I said, more with stressing them and underwatering mm-hmm. than taking too good of care. If you love them too much, then they'll just be green. So yell at them a bit and tell them that you need some flowers. Because
okay,
they can flower.
So I don't have to fertilize or anything.
I wouldn't fertilize now. Wait till February. It's a good idea to fertilize. But right now, the plants are responding to shorter days.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to you know, be inappropriate with fertilizers at this time of year. Yeah, but they can flower at any time. It's like orchids, right? They can mm-hmm. flower year round. So go for it. Just yell at them a bit.
Okay.
They'll respond.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Welcome, Wanda. As we say goodbye to Wanda, that opens up a line for others to call in and have a chat with Charlie Dobbin here in the Garden Show from Zoomer Radio. Number in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Anywhere in the province, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. And let's see, we go to Caledon next. There's Virginia. Good morning, Virginia. Welcome to the show.
To both of you, I love your show. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling today, I have in the garden lot of asparagus that I planted quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all like all over now. Like they multiplied everywhere.
Yes, the patch got bigger, kind of like raspberries. Yeah.
We like to put them nice and straight, like in a, you know, like so we can
yeah.
we can go through to pick them or.
That's right. Yeah, nice if you can keep them orderly in rows. Yeah.
I would like to know which is the best time to dig them out and replant them.
It's a good question. I'm going to double check this. I have a feeling you could do it either now or in the spring. If you do it in the spring, though, you are going to limit your harvest because obviously where you're moving around and digging and you know, moving plants around, you're not going to harvest any of those plants that you've right. moved that first yeah. spring. So less to harvest. If you do it now at this time of year, the plants get a chance to get some roots going, get a little bit organized in terms of being ready to provide a harvest next spring.
Yeah.
But you're going to end up having to cut some of those ferns down a bit in now if you do that, just because you're going to lose roots. You're going to have to do a little bit of top growth cutting yeah. down, not all the way, but just bringing some of that ferny top growth down.
Maybe leave about 6, like 10 inches.
Yeah. Well, how tall are they now? A good 3 or 4 feet, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So I'd take them down to half height or whatever they are now. But I am going to double check this because I haven't ever transplanted asparagus. So it's a good question. I'm going to, my recommendation right now is do it now in the fall. But when we have a break here, I'm going to look it up. So keep listening and I will confirm that I was right or wrong with my best suggestion.
I will listen. I will keep the radio on next week too. I like it all this every time. I love to hear other people with different questions.
Yeah, exactly. Good stuff.
Super.
Thanks, Virginia.
Thank you.
All righty. Talk to you next week, maybe, huh? Lorraine in Toronto. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Frank. Good morning, Charlie. How are you both?
Good morning. Good. Excellent.
Good. Okay, my problem is in my backyard, I have that invasive plant, Chinese knockwood. Now, I've used the weeds where, vinegar and soap, and it's killed it. Is there anything that you can do for that? Because I cut them down, and the next day, they're, like, sprouting out again.
So what are you calling Chinese knockwood?
I looked it up, and they say that's an invasive plant. It's all along the Humber River through Hyde Park, and they grow really tall, and they get these beautiful white flowers at the top, and their roots spread underneath.
Huh.
We cut some down and we laid it on the ground to dry and they were rooting into the ground. And
no kidding. Wow.
Okay, let me just double check because I'm not... Oh, knotweed.
Knockwood. Is it knockwood, son?
Well, there's such a thing as knotweed.
That's it. Knockweed, Chinese knockweed. They grow about 10, 12 feet tall and they just... Beautiful white flowers, but they're an invasive plant. They're
yeah,
all over Toronto.
We have a lot of that lately. Okay, yeah. So there, yeah, it is definitely knotweed is a huge problem, very invasive. So to destroy any of the knotweeds that remain on the site, allow the cut canes to dry out, then burn them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
Do not, on any account, add them to your normal household waste or your personal composters. When digging out, remove as much root as possible, then repeatedly destroy the regrowth by mowing or with a non-selective herbicide like Roundup. Roundup is quite effective early in the spring on green growth of noxious weeds.
Okay.
So, but you do have to stay on top of it. The plants rarely die with one spraying, but, and it's, they only, like, doesn't do anything on bark. Roundup must touch green growth, and you have to be careful that you only put it on what you're trying to kill. So you don't use it on a windy day.
Lock everything else up.
That's right. Yeah. It's not what they call non-selective. So yes, it can be a real problem. Depending on where it is, I mean, there's that idea, we've talked about it on the show, solarizing, you know, the big plastic tarpaulin, over top of where the problem
sure no
is.
Light gets in at all.
Yeah.
It's back in the back of the property, my yard, and it's grown, taken over there.
Mm.
So that's what we can try that.
Yeah.
Now, I use a solution of vinegar, Epsom salts, and some Dawn to kill the weeds in my patio. Would that kill that, do you think? Or
does it kill your weeds?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Huh. And what's the solution again? It's
1 gallon of vinegar, 2 cups of Epsom salt, and 2 tablespoons of the Blue Dawn detergent.
Oh, really?
And I sprayed it in my interlocking brick, and a couple hours later, it's all shriveled up, and we just pull them out.
Well, son of a gun. Charlie's going to get that recipe on her website.
I think it's the vinegar that's doing all of that.
Yeah.
Because the soap and the Epsom salts.
Blue
Dawn is just detergent. Those things, on a hot, sunny day where the sun is blasting down, yes, the detergent can help kill plants.
Yes.
But it's probably the vinegar that's doing most of the killing there.
Yeah.
And Chinese knotweed is pretty tough. But get out your whippersnapper. This would be in the spring or even now. Cut it down as tight to the ground as you can. Then a tarpaulin over top. all the edges sealed with rocks or 2x4s or soil.
Whatever.
No light allowed underneath, and you can eventually suffocate those noxious weeds.
Oh, good. I'll try that.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thanks,
Lorraine.
Have a great day, you too.
No, thank you very much. Yep, going to, for sure. Now, we have to take a little bit of a break here, and that'll give time for some research to be done by Charlie on the computer and to come back and determine whether she was right or wrong. And
as long as you aren't distracting me, chitter-chattering about other things.
Oh, no, I never do that.
No, never.
No, of course not. Back in a moment here on Zoomer Radio.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Well, Charlie, as you can see, I have my little bell in hand here.
Yes.
So that is for Teresa, first-time caller here in Toronto. Hi, Teresa.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I'm actually in Mississauga.
Oh, Mississauga. Well, let me mark that down. Okay.
Yeah. Charlie, I actually was a student of yours in the Humber College course, the very first course you taught in greenhouses.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, nice to see.
I was one of the few that was not in the horticultural business. We were there just for fun.
Right. Yeah. Oh, good. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah. So I'm calling because I'd like your advice on picking the perfect backyard when we move. So my husband and I are ready to make a move, and I want a backyard that is perfect for vegetable gardening. Mm. And real estate agents really don't understand what I should be, you know, what I want. All I mean, it should only be south-facing.
Necessarily. I mean, we all kind of have a sense of what direction we want the front or the back of our house to face, usually. A western location for a vegetable garden can be excellent. It's very hot, very sunny, as is a south. Very hot, very sunny. And, of course, that's what vegetables want. So, yeah, either of those. And if, assuming you want to put the vegetables in the back, then you would be looking for that direction for the back area. So west or south. But, you know, I've done a lot of vegetables in the front of my house, too. The house I just moved out of in Richmond Hill faced south at the front. And I've mixed up all kinds of vegetables in amongst roses and flowers and this and that and the other thing. Because it's wonderful. You get the southern location, and then you put a tree in, and now you don't have so much sun. So now, you know what? Gardens are always evolving.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything? What about the tree line? Things causing shade.
You mean like a neighbor, like cedar hedge, that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Well, you know, keep in mind how the sun moves in the summer, particularly coming up in the northeast, doing that sort of very large circle all the way around before it sets in the northwest. And of course, in the summer, in the winter, it's a much shorter, the traverse is much smaller and the days obviously are shorter. So just, any yard you're standing in and you're looking, I want to do vegetables here. But, you know, your phone has a compass on it. Get your little compass out, stand there, get your north, south orientation. So you're absolutely clear. Cause sometimes it's hard to know what direction we're facing. And then do an eyeball of what's going to happen when the sun is doing its thing during, June and July and August when you really need that maximum sun. Okay. Also be aware of soil. You'd be surprised, of course, how important soil really is. So, if possible, just take a little trowel with you when you go to visit a house or a shovel. Yes. Just get a sense of is it pure clay, pure sand, or something in between.
Okay, great. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. And something we don't mention often enough.
What's that?
Once Teresa has purchased that house, she can always hire you as an advisor to come in, take a look at the property, say, okay, here's what I would do.
Right. Well, the optimal.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those are the services you provide.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
yeah,
good point.
All right.
Thank you, Frank.
Check out that website, which is again
charliedobbin.com. .ca. Everything.
Hire her. The girl needs work as if she doesn't have enough to do already. Wow. Hey, Patty in Pickering. I love it. A little alliteration there. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Charlie and Frank. Thank you for taking my call. My question is that I've been collecting seeds from flowers that have finished blooming, for instance, cosmos and echinacea, and I want to know if I should keep them all winter and plant them in the spring, or should I just sprinkle them on the ground now, because I think that's how they keep producing by feeding themselves.
Right. So good question. Cosmos, as you know, is an annual plant. So the seeds, if they were to germinate this fall, would die in the little plants would die in the frost. However, our cosmos that we grow in our gardens will often just drop seeds. They'll sit there all fall and winter. Come spring, they'll just naturally germinate right there in the garden. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of, depending on the kind of fall we have, you could, just to be absolutely positive to make sure you get the cosmos plants, you could hold on to those seeds and go out with those in the spring, because that way for sure you're putting them where you want them and you know that they should come up given mm-hmm. a preparation of a seed bed, and you're giving them lots of sun and you're planting them, early spring, out, straight outside. Echinacea.
What I notice when I'm walking around and looking at other gardens, that they seem to come up on their own. Mm. So are they a biennial?
No, they're coming up from seed. They okay. are an annual, but it's the seed that survives the winter, not the plants.
Okay, so I should sprinkle some outside now.
Yeah, like I said, you could sprinkle it now, or you could wait and sprinkle in the spring. And when
okay,
it comes
so
to
I could keep them some and do it both ways.
Yeah, exactly. If you've got that big a collection, why not? And the echinacea that you've collected seeds from, depending on the variety, so you got to remember, many of the echinacea are quite highly bred, and the seeds will not necessarily grow what you think. So the seeds are not going to match the parent, depending on what echinacea you've collected seeds from. So that's always a bit of a surprise. You can see what comes up. And honestly, those seeds, I would sprinkle now. Mm-hmm. Get them out for the winter.
Good to know. Then I will go ahead and proceed on what your advice is.
All righty. Thanks for calling, Patty.
Thanks, Patty. All the very best, and thank you for joining us. And I say all of you, I mean all of you for calling in with such interesting questions. We're going to have to leave a couple of folks on the line because we're just running fresh out of racetrack, you know?
It's true.
And you've got a busy day ahead of you.
I do. You and I are going to grab a little breakfast, and then I'm on the road meeting a landscape contractor at a supplier, basically mm-hmm. a landscape construction company supply out in Prince Edward County to discuss hardscaping and patios and stairs and all that important stuff.
But I was serious about, considering the fact that if you've got a problem on your property, you don't quite know what the heck to do with it as far as gardening is concerned or design. Who better to hire than Charlie Dobbin, God's sake, right?
She's been everywhere, that's for sure.
Exactly. And I'm heading home. Yeah. Shirley has got the table already set with all the Thanksgiving
turkeys.
Stuff. And it's going to be so much fun. I'm just looking forward to it so much.
Big feast coming for you.
Oh, yeah. Her sister Betty's bringing the ham,
Wow. And this is after you do some more shows this afternoon.
Oh,
yeah. Because you're nonstop.
From 2 to 3:30, I'm back in the air here. So I hope to have some of the folks with me.
Good stuff. Well, you have a wonderful feast and good show this afternoon live in the city, right? So enjoy that, and I'm going to be, like I said, heading east and going
safe
to
the, driving.
Hopefully next steps.
Okay, kiddo.
Thanks everybody. Thanks, Duncan. See you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.